And good afternoon, everyone. This is Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I combined community and radio there into a new thing. Anyway, I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Hi, Muffins. How are you?
We know that voice.
Yes, I'm back. I'm outside of the Fortress of Solitude now.
After, was it witness protection?
It might have been. I can't say.
Well, welcome back, Oliver Rockside. We are very happy to have you back on the show with us,
It is an absolute honor. Thank you very much for asking me back.
As you may or may not know, Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of the screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today, we will look at the debate to expand the CPP, the province's financial ministers, and the federal finance minister, Bill Morneau, reached a deal in principle Monday, but business is advising caution lest the economy be negatively affected. Do they have a point? Then Parliament has wrapped for the summer, and we will talk about why, after two-thirds of a year, Justin Trudeau is still so darn popular, although some of us are apparently getting sick of the selfies, and it looks like Jason Kenney may not be going after the federal conservative leadership bid after all. He's going after another leadership, and we'll talk about that. And then finally, Trump, because Rockside is here, and I think he might have something to say about the presumptive Republican nominee.
Just a smidge.
Just a smidge. Well, we'll let him sort all that out later on in the show. But first, today's the big day in the United Kingdom. The Brexit vote is happening. Well, I was going to say happening now, but it actually just wrapped now. The polls closed at 5 p.m. our time, 10 p.m. in UK time. And this did not come easy, and it did not come without personal tragedy. Of course, MP Joe Cox was killed last weekend by what looks like an ultra-nationalist. Proof that this debate was so much more in the minds of some people than just a political and economic alliance. It was something much more base, shall we say?
Yeah, and you know, coming from English parentage, it's...
That's right.
Yeah, I understand the... how do I put this? I understand that the thinking, although it's a ridiculous amount of thinking. You know, one thing that I'm finding now in these kind of electoral issues is that there's an age gap that's now. And it happened with Obama. It's happening now in the UK over this issue because all the young'uns, you know, are being the reasonable ones by saying that they want to stay in. It's the older population who want Rule Britannia to return and, you know, for it to be white faces everywhere. And they have a deep suspicion for anything to do with Europe from two world wars. And that's where it comes from. But life is changing, Adam. I mean, we talk about globalization all over the place. This is part of globalization. And why they would even think of this vote to me is insane. You know, these UKIP dippies and Boris Johnson, who not only in appearance but apparently in intellect was created in Jim Henson's workshop. You know, started lying about figures, saying that they were sending him, you know, it was 350 million pounds a week when it was only 190. So all these scare tactics and everything like that. And Europe doesn't want them to leave.
No.
No, for one for two reasons, I think. One, they'll talk about, which is they want them to foot the bill for Greece.
Right.
You know, they don't want, if England, if UK leaves, you know, they've got a bigger share of paying for Greece.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that they don't like to talk about is that they don't want the UK to leave because they don't want the Germans in charge. Remember?
Interesting, yeah.
You remember that they, they're not really big on Germany being in charge of things in Europe.
Right.
Google Germany. They're always up to something.
The Germans are not all smiles and sunshine.
Yeah, they don't want to talk about that. They want a counterbalance to Germany in that. And so that's why Europe wants them still.
Yeah, and I think somebody was talking about the EU may end up having to evolve in some way. And the way one person put it that I read, that it may be an outer ring and an inner ring. And in the inner ring, you have places like the UK, Germany, the Netherlands, Belgium. And then on the outer ring, you have like places like in Eastern Europe, places that don't benefit as much financially from the Eurozone as those other places. But I do want to hit on something you brought up, which is it's something that someone from The Economist actually brought up on a podcast I was listening to, that, yeah, the wars. Britain has fond memories of the war, our finest hour, that kind of thing. Churchill, the rest of Europe doesn't remember World War II nearly that fondly. It was the darkest hour, and Britain kind of had the advantage being not part of the mainland and coming in as kind of like as one of the heroes sweeping in, saving the rest of the continent from the Nazis. So the history is a bit different. While the rest of Europe kind of has an appreciation of striving for unity and working together, the British have always kind of stood apart.
Yeah, well, I think that goes both ways. I think in the thinking, I'm not in the approval. I think that a lot of people in the UK believe that they saved Europe.
Yeah,
and so we shouldn't be answering to them. They wouldn't have a country if it wasn't for us. You say to a person from the UK that the Americans won the World War.
Yeah.
Oh God. So they look at it that way. But, you know, your two-ring system, that would fit beautifully with the UK because you're creating a class system.
There you go.
You know, that's not going to work. It's one for all and all for one and one for all.
Mm-hmm.
I think Europe is much more suspicious of Germany being in charge, but also the fact that Putin is becoming more Putin-y, if we can put it that way. And this now has become a security issue. I'm not talking about refugees. I'm talking about what Putin is doing in places like the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. As John Oliver said, Putin calls Ukraine phase one. I think that's more of a concern now.
Mm-hmm.
Greece is a concern, but I think that everybody's resigned to the fact that Greece is going to be, if you don't mind the pun, a ruin for a very, very long time. You know, and so everybody's just going to have to take their medicine on that one.
Yeah.
I think the Europeans, and, you know, there's some, you know, the EU is in Belgium.
Right.
You know, Belgium has somewhat of a history of, during wars, being Germany's, shall we say, prison girlfriend. they're not really big on Germany being in charge.
No.
So this is all the kind of there's a history in this that I think is deeply seated, that needs to be worked out, where everybody has to go, you know what? We have to look through the windshield and not the rearview mirror on this one.
Yeah, and part of that is, as you said, the ugliness of this, how it got pretty ugly, and it's because the economic argument just wasn't working. Although I did read a piece in Fortune that was basically like, it's not going to be that bad. But when you're talking about all these free trade agreements that have been negotiated through Europe as a whole entity, and Barack Obama goes to England and says, well, you know what, if Great Britain leaves, then you guys go to the bottom. We're in the midst of like 30 different trade deals right now, and mm-hmm. to negotiate a whole new one with Great Britain, you have to go back to the back of the queue, as it were. So the economic argument was very powerful, and it was winning by we talked about this, Scotty and I, a couple of weeks ago, and it was – people tend to, in referendums, favor the status quo to begin with. But the economic argument was the particular compelling one and seemed to be winning. And then this got ugly really, really fast. And then we had Joe Cox last weekend. And I think Thomas Mayer, the man who killed her, said in court – when he was asked his name, he said, "My name is Death to Traitors, Freedom for Britain." So it's really not hard to read motive in there.
No. No, that's somewhat transparent.
Yeah.
Yeah. It did get ugly, and it's a terrible, terrible tragedy in a place I'm fairly familiar with, West Yorkshire, in a place that wouldn't even – like, she would never even have thought anything like this would have happened with her walking along the street. It wouldn't even entered her head.
Yeah.
I think it is a microcosm of what the UKIP is brewing.
Mm.
And again, we're going to talk about this at the end of the show, about what happens when you let the true believers run your institution.
Right.
And this is what comes out. And one of the other interesting things about this whole thing from an economic point of view is that Scotland and Wales were totally down with staying in.
Yeah.
Which I found very interesting. Because the other thing that we haven't talked about is I don't think they're going to vote to leave. But if they did vote to leave, then Scotland gets its redo.
Right.
You know, Scotland will go, well, you got to opt out of something. Why can't we opt out? It's a chain reaction.
Right.
And that's something, again, that we talked about this, I think, just before we wrapped up Beyond the Ballot Box. We were talking about the vote for Scotland.
Yeah.
Now, judging by the stock market, and I know that's a terrible thing to say, but they usually get things right. The stock market was going through the roof today.
Right.
So I think they're pretty certain that they're going to vote to stay in. The other thing is that all of these trade deals that you mentioned, there has been some complaints that the regulation that the EU puts on British goods going back and forth from the actual island,
right,
those will still remain.
Yeah.
You know, they're still going – for them to export something to Europe, if they're out of it, they're still going to have to abide by all those EU conditions to ship it over into the EU. So there's no change there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just this amount. It's about 190 million pounds a week. That's really what it comes down to. And Boris Johnson said that, you know, we can be devoting this to the national health. Like, that's going to happen. but that was kind of his tagline for all of this. And that's, you know – that's just the cost of doing business.
And that's the default to all of this, too, is, you know, you can say about any issue, any amount spent, well, that's money that could be going to health or transit or something like that. So, I mean, it's almost a straw man in that sense.
It absolutely is.
Yeah.
Absolutely is. And funnily enough, coming from Boris Johnson.
He's delightfully disheveled.
What a dweeb.
So you think it's going to be stay or remain, which always seems like a weird...
I think probably 10% margin. Mm. I think it's probably going to be 55-45, somewhere around there. Mm. But again, one of the other things, just briefly, is it's great to see the young people engaged in another vote.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really impressive. And these kind of issues, if people from 18 to 30 are getting involved in these issues where they're actually going and registering and voting and so on and so forth, that's a fantastic development, no matter what comes out of it.
Well, you and Conrad Black's betting on that it will happen. So I read that yesterday.
That it will stay?
That Brexit will happen.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. That England will stay? Well, not will leave.
Yeah, it will leave.
Oh, Conrad Black's an idiot.
Well, we will find out later today. Later today, our time, a little bit tomorrow, British time. They are expecting results to start coming in around 12:30 a.m. UK time, which is about 7:30 p.m. our time. So shortly after the dinner hour, we'll start hearing what the voter turnout looks like, and then we'll find out shortly thereafter.
And just to be clear, I think they are going to vote to stay.
Yeah, I think
too. Yeah, I think it's about a 10-point gap, I think, they'll probably have.
The polls have been putting it between, 50 and 54% remain.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's a safe bet. And we've been saying, referendums usually favor the safe bet.
Yeah.
Speaking of safe bets, or perhaps unsafe bets, it's still unclear. But an unprecedented agreement on expanding the Canadian pension plan this week on Monday. The provincial finance ministers and federal finance minister Bill Morneau had a head-to-head about whether or not the nation of Canada can agree on expanding CPP, and it turns out we could agree on expanding CPP. It is the largest expansion of the service in 50 years. You will be paying about $300 more a year starting in 2019. It's going to be the increase is going to be phased in over 5 years. But the reason it's so great to have you on, Oliver, is because you are a former business owner. Mm-hmm. And
not quite.
Well, manager.
Well, not quite. I was in the solar system, let's just say.
Okay. But you ran a business, so the argument is that this is going to have a negative impact in terms of hiring, in terms of investment back into the business. What's your take?
Those are huge excuses. Let me just put it that way.
All right.
I know that I'm sitting in for Scott.
Yeah.
So some people may think that I'm doing a Hertz impression here.
Okay.
But I'm not. I mean this sincerely. This is a socialist idea.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this solution doesn't have enough socialism in it.
Mm-hmm.
This is a little hidden trick that happens. This happens with your EI. This happens with your Canada Pension Plan. And this is the big fault in this.
Right.
I love the fact that they've done this, but if they're going to reform, let's reform the whole way.
Right.
Okay. I'll get to the business question in a second. But
okay.
this is just the problem is that most people don't realize is that it used to be $55,000, where you would then stop paying your CPP.
Right.
So what would happen, and the reason is that you would stop at $55,000 is because when you get older, when you actually time for you to get it,
mm-hmm.
you'd already maxed out the amount that was allowed, which was at 25% of that.
Right.
However, that's not helping any. I knew people who tapped out of their paying their CPP in like the first week of March.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the year, they didn't pay anything into it.
Mm-hmm.
In 1965, we made a social contract with Canadians that we would be our brothers and sisters' keeper.
Mm-hmm.
They've now raised this up to $85,000 is the cap. Why not? Why is there a cap?
Yeah.
Why is there a cap? You know, if you make $300,000 a year, you're 4.95% to help out Canadians and help out you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, if you're making $300,000 and you don't have a retirement program already set up, you're an idiot. But but we made a social contract that we would take care. Nobody with any sense of human solidarity with a small s
mm-hmm.
wants to see elderly people poor.
Right.
Nobody does. So even the U.S. went with this idea in around the same time. Now, the business part of this is that what happens is that when you pay your 4.9%, your employer pays 4.95% into it.
Right.
Let's just think this one through. If you remember that the 4.9% is based on the person's salary.
Mm-hmm.
If you can afford to pay someone $300,000 a year, mm-hmm. guess what? You could do a chip in.
Yeah.
As I've always said about the minimum wage, Adam,
mm-hmm.
if you can't afford $15 an hour, and to be fair, that really equates into $22.50 an hour because the employer has to pay workman's compensation, their contributions to it, mm-hmm. you shouldn't be in business.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. You just shouldn't. Same here.
That's a great point because when I read the article and I was quoting the Federation of Small Businesses and they're talking about, well, it's going to affect wages. We can't give people as many hours. We can't reinvest in the business. I'm like, isn't these the same arguments against raising the minimum wage? And haven't those arguments been disproven that actually when you raise the minimum wage, businesses actually make more money because people have more disposable income?
I can vouch for that personally. Absolutely. Absolutely. You get what you pay for,
mm-hmm.
and it works the same way with labor. It just, if you employ people, treat them nicely, they bring value to your business, which then converts into sales. It's just, it's so simple.
Yeah.
But this excuse of it's going to do this, this, and this, if you have to chip in another 4.9%, I'll even go halfway at them.
Okay.
Okay. Once the employee taps out
mm-hmm.
at 88,
mm-hmm.
they have to keep on paying their 4.9%. The company doesn't. It'll just be so. If you're making your $300,000 for the $220,000 difference, the employee pays the 4.9%, and the employer doesn't. The other thing we have to point out here is we have to point out two things that will affect business. Number one. The tax rate in Canada is 16%, the corporate tax rate.
Yeah.
That's the lowest in the Western world.
Yeah.
The U.S. corporate tax rate is 35%.
Mm-hmm.
Don't talk to me about 4.9%. Suck it up. Suck it up. Now, the other thing is that 4.9% is tax deductible, you know, for the business.
Yeah.
Right? As it is for the employee. I mean, it comes off when you do your taxes.
Yeah.
The other thing that nobody's talking about and how it would affect business much, much more is that this is an unfunded mandate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an unfunded mandate by about $900 billion with a B, dollars. We are going to need about $1.1 trillion to take care of everybody at the current rate
mm-hmm.
because of baby boomers and then Gen X coming along, right?
Yeah.
there's only about $150 billion in the kitty. So we have this gap that we have to make up. Now, if that gap is not made up, it comes out of the Treasury,
yeah.
which means it filters down to the businesses because the government is running at such a deficit.
Yeah.
The dollar gets it, blah, 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 blah. See, this is what, when people, these small business people, start going on about stuff like this, they're never talking about the big picture. They're never looking at the long game.
Right.
It's just, you know, oh, I have to give another 4.9% to the government. No, there's ramifications of not doing this that will affect all of us.
So is that just what it is? Like, I want to keep what's mine. What's mine is mine, and what's yours isn't mine. And
okay, this is one of the. I get in so many fights about this. I have no idea. What happens, especially with small business owners, is that they go, well, I took a risk.
Mm-hmm.
I employ people, and I took a risk.
Yeah.
That's very true, mm-hmm. and kudos. But you took a risk because you're a complete control freak. People who own businesses, on the whole, are control freaks. They don't want anybody telling them what to do. That's why that's part of the impetus of starting your own business.
Be your own boss.
Okay? Yes, you took a risk. But you took a risk for a reason that is a personal one,
mm-hmm.
just like everybody else takes a personal reason for taking a job or not taking a job.
Yeah.
We sometimes look at people who, and I'm a big small business guy. I would love everybody to be small business people. But you have to realize that you're not heroes. And sometimes, especially with these Canadian Federation of Independent Business People, it's like they make themselves out to be superhuman because they employ people and they took a risk.
They're job creators.
Yeah. It's like super, but you did it for your own personal reasons because there's something going on with you.
Right.
You know, and nobody ever talks about that. And so anytime this little thing, the other thing is, to be quite frank with you, Adam, is that if you do have an employee that's making 300 grand a year, your contribution to his or her CPP mm-hmm. would be 25 grand. That's your Ben's payments for a year.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's just stop the insanity.
How about the politics of this? Because it's not. I mean, yeah, the Liberals have kind of taken point on the issue. The federal Liberals, I mean, Kathleen Wynne is taking some credit, if not all the credit, for making this happen. Because you're rolling your eyes. I know you're not a fan, but this is quite the thing. I mean, because we have an incredibly diverse country. Granted, two provinces didn't sign on, Quebec, obviously, because Quebec has their own plan. But the other one was Manitoba, and that's because Manitoba, the present government in Manitoba, is only 4 weeks old. So this is quite the thing that they've gotten. I mean, it's a political feather in the hat for Morneau and for the federal Liberals that they've got this agreement.
Absolutely. I'm not complaining about the agreement. I just think that if you're going to go and reform it, just reform it the whole way.
Yeah.
Now, with Kathleen Wynne, she dodged a huge bullet with this.
Yes, I agree with that.
And now, I did read the same thing that maybe you did, where the impetus for this was apparently with Kathleen Wynne suggesting this for Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how that works, but she knew this is the greatest thing that ever happened to her because she knew that she was never going to be able to fulfill that promise. And
yeah.
Now it's been taken out of her hands.
And already been delayed. They were supposed to be in this year's budget.
Yeah, because it was one of these, oh, we'll announce it now and work out the details later. Well, the details got worked out, and no.
I think that's pretty spot on. I do find it fascinating that, you know, we everything's so partisan and everything's so regional, but we were able to agree that this is, I mean, almost all of us, with potential exceptions, that this is something that had to be done. And yeah, it would have been nice if more could have been done. But I mean, sometimes these things have to happen in increments. And
when you have a $900 billion debt hanging over your head, that makes governments, I don't care what they are, start working some stuff out.
Yeah.
Because that would just reverberate. You know, all of these provinces look at their transfer payments.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and if that $900 billion had to be supplied by the federal government, those transfer payments were getting mighty short.
Yeah.
To make up for that. See, everybody was in the jackpot here in a government situation. Something had to be done.
Yeah.
I just wish that they had gone further and taken this. Really, it's a tax write-off for people who make over $86,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's one of these, it's like the RRSP. I always complain about the RRSP. RRSP was the greatest invention for people who make $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
For people who make $300,000, it's a tax dodge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they put their $13,000 in, get the tax break of $6,500, and take their kids to Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not helping anybody.
Well, it's helping the good people at Disney World.
Yeah, well, don't get me started.
Goofy's got to get paid.
Yeah, and the alligators.
Sorry. We'll leave it there because that may have finally canceled us. We are going to play some PSAs and then some bit of music, and then we'll be right back with more conversation. You are listening to Open Sources Guelph right here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to the CFRU 93.3 FM.
And that was Gwen Stefani featuring Akon, The Sweet Escape, which is from the album of the same name. We were talking in the break that Gwen Stefani probably wouldn't have been heard on our last show.
No. Jan is now freaking because it was singer-songwriter free and banjo free, which we're all very fortunate. We're all very glad about, I think.
Yeah, that was two strikes.
Yes.
But we played, or rather I played, I made the musical selection this week. You can always tell because I have like top 40 sensibilities, but I played The Sweet Escape because this week our parliamentarians, the 42nd Parliament, made their sweet summer escape. And Justin Trudeau had a nice wrap-up press conference where I think it was in the National Post. They said it was he praised Parliament for being relatively uninteresting, and I mean, except for that one day, but otherwise
the bionic elbow. Yeah,
but it is interesting. Even after that, the popularity—it's been almost a year. I mean, it's been 2/3 of a year since they won. Still very popular, like 56% popularity of the Liberals. I think the last time we had you on was election night.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear what you've thought of JT so far.
Well, I think that I'm giving it a 7. I think that a quiet session is exactly what he needed to kind of get his feet wet. So I'm very surprised, well, because the Conservatives and the NDP are in complete disarray at the moment. That was part of, I think, what had happened. I think that Justin's very quippy, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think the trip to Washington, the state dinner, was I hate style over substance, but it went, that was a home run.
Oh, for sure.
That was a home run.
Yeah.
The timing of it was perfect. The actual fact that that the U.S. agreed to do a state dinner.
Yeah.
You know, for all of you American President fans, the movie, you know what state dinners do. Obama even talked about him in the White House correspondence, brought him up in the White House correspondence.
Yeah, you got a shout out.
Yeah, when Justin was 2,000 miles away. You know, we had the bionic elbow incident, and we had the C-31s, the C-31 stuff is still a little bit there's a lot of vagaries in there. I know a lot of people are upset about it, but I can't quite wrap my head around it. And the fact that he continued it on, is that basically true that he continued it on?
Assisted dying, you mean?
No, what was the... I'm sorry. Maybe I've gotten myself confused. It is very difficult.
Right.
The one that C-30 one, maybe then it was. I don't know.
Do you mean the assisted dying one? Or?
No. It was the security one.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. They haven't done anything about that yet. But it's. I don't think that's also been on the front burner too, because the Liberals weren't, unlike the NDP, they didn't come out and say we're going to repeal the whole thing. They were going to Jenga it and take out blocks and.
The one thing that I'm going to put my capitalist hat on now, since I put my socialist hat on in the CCP discussion. The one thing, I'm not a big lover of governments running deficits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a favor of governments running surpluses either. Governments are not businesses. Governments should not be run like your home budget. Don't even go. When people say that, it's like, no, government should come in at zero every year.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of deficit spending, but I think the smart thing that he did do is that if he was going to go into deficit spending, which he did it with infrastructure.
Right.
For two reasons. Number one, we need it.
Yeah.
And it gives you a tangible asset. It's something that actually needs to be done that's not in the ether. Because people can see it. If you're going to spend the money, I always think that the infrastructure projects are the ones that are the best, not only for value, but also for perception. So he said he was going to add $10 billion to the deficit to do this kind of stuff. I think that was a wise move if you were going to spend the money.
It was wise. And it's also for stuff that isn't the what they call non-sexy infrastructure, which is like sewer pipes and stuff underground, which you don't see, like wiring. It's not going to be all like in 5 years we're going to all be cutting ribbons on new civic centers, although that's certainly a part of it too. But
no, I would rather them do the sewers and civic centers.
Absolutely.
You know, people don't see those, but they see them being built. You know, they see the road being ripped up and, you know, they see pipe going in.
And we certainly saw that down on Gordon Street a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
I wanted to talk about too... about that mess you mentioned, the Conservative and NDP mess, because there's been a couple of developments because they're both in leadership races now. So far, the NDP has one declared leadership candidate, Sherry DeNovo, who's an Ontario MPP. But what's fascinating is she's refusing to pay the $30,000 entry fee that you have to pay when you apply. So she's not going to be on the ballot when the leadership convention happens, or she's going to depend on a lot of write-in candidates.
She didn't do a Kickstarter? It
may happen. And then on the other side, the conservative side, one of the guys who was supposed to be the guy, one of the guys, Jason Kenney, is looking like he's not interested in federal conservatorship race. He might be going back to Alberta to unite the right there, although I'm not sure which is the tougher challenge, uniting the right in Alberta or, you know, having to face off against the Trudeau Liberals in 2019. I think that's, you know, the poisoner or pill option.
No, I think that I think Alberta is a much easier road to hoe. Jason Kenney, he is the rock star of the super Christy wing of the Conservative Party. He plays in Alberta. He's a super, super big fundraiser for that wing of the party.
Yeah.
Maybe we can tie this together. The NDP is destroying their own premier in Alberta at the moment. So Jason Kenney, I think, has a much, much easier road. I think Jason Kenney's come to the conclusion that I think a lot of Canadians came to, in that small C American conservatism does not work in Canada. It just doesn't. Every time the Conservative Party got reelected because they went moderate, they could never ever get these little social conservative things that they'd all promised through. They didn't even get mentioned because Stephen Harper wasn't interested in social issues. He never was. He wasn't going to be.
Yeah.
And when they brought those kind of things to the fore, the Canadian population just doesn't want anything to do with it. And that's where Jason Kenney lives, I think. And I think so he goes to a smaller stage in Alberta where it does work big time. I mean, you go south of Calgary, that works huge, what he's offering to sell. So,
no, I think you're right. We've talked about this on the show before. It seems like they've been throwing out everything that the Conservative Party was supposed to be about. I mean, you have people like Patrick Brown, who was a Harper caucus member, saying, like, we need to talk about climate change. We need to acknowledge it and then need to talk about what we're going to do about it. And you have Rona Ambrose, within weeks, of being named interim leader, saying, okay, we're on board with an inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women and girls. And, yeah, we're going to change this archaic line in our constitution that we think that marriage is one man and one woman. Mm. So, it's almost weird to have seen that happen over the last several months, just like Harper's gone. And we should add that that rumor a couple of weeks ago didn't come to pass that he was going to announce his retirement from Parliament at the convention.
Yeah.
But people are still saying he might have left Parliament for the last time, Stephen Harper. He may not be back when fall session starts.
I don't know why he would. I mean, he's done his bit. I mean, what are you going to do after this? That makes no sense. I never understand that in politics, to be quite honest with you. I never understand getting fired instead of quitting.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. If you know you're going to lose, don't run.
Yeah.
Well, why?
I understand that he didn't want to look like Jim Prentice, because remember when Jim Prentice lost the Alberta election, he quit before the votes were counted. I understand that.
There's a happy medium, yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that is I just can't see Jason Kenney wanting to go through that slog, because he's just not of that. He's not of the Rona Ambrose wing,
Right.
I think Rona Ambrose should take this ball and go with it myself.
I don't disagree, actually.
I mean, she's a little bit more entertaining. She's a little bit more perky than certainly Stephen Harper was.
Yeah.
And probably much more intelligent. And I think okay, that's debatable.
When I think of Rona Ambrose, I still think of her going full Helen Lovejoy over marijuana last year. it was not very comfortable for me. Of course, Kelly Leach, who is one of the announced candidates, has said that if the Liberals do end up legalizing marijuana, she is going to criminalize it right back again.
It's ridiculous. So. I just want to touch on Sherry DeNovo just for a second.
Yes, please.
Is that, she when she says she can't raise the $30,000, that kind of makes me giggle, because she was very well, by all reports, very well regarded MPP for Parkdale High Park.
Yeah.
Okay. If somebody in High Park can't write her a check for $30,000, come on.
Well, I don't think, I'm not sure she doesn't. She can't write the check. I think she won't write the check.
Oh,
it's a principal thing.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, no, I think she made that pretty clear on the Canada Land Commons podcast last week, that she refused to acknowledge that NDP, socialist, Leave Manifesto, Party of the People, Power to the People, wanted $30,000 to run as their leader.
And the Kickstarter got kiboshed. Okay.
I don't know. Maybe it's still in the offing. I don't know. I mean, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's a long barbecue season for our politician friends. Okay, this is it. I think we've been dying to hear the Ruxitean rant on Trump. So we're gonna launch that. We're gonna uncork it right now. 3, 2.
What a dillweed. just for a little bit of background, I spent 4.5 months in the U.S. This winter. Funnily enough, I didn't wear pants all of December. I know you didn't need to know that, but it was just the weather. It was
where were you?
Florida. Yeah. it was one of the funny things about Florida. There's a saying in Florida, actually, that the farther north in Florida you go, the farther south you get.
Interesting.
Now, I was in South Florida, so I didn't get the full onslaught of Trump. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, Adam, that as some people may know who listen to our old show, I love listening or talking to people I don't agree with, just for several reasons. I get to learn a different position, so on and so forth. But listening to right-wing radio in the wintertime during the Trump versus Cruz versus, at that time, Rubio fight,
oh, yeah.
It was delicious. You had Ann Coulter and Sean Hannity on the Trump thing. Then you had people like Glenn Beck and Mark Levin yelling at each other over this. This kind of insurrection of is something, because one thing the Republicans are very good about is keeping on message. They'll go down with the ship with dogma and message.
Mm-hmm.
And this time it just split everybody.
Yeah.
And it's because you had the Fool and you had Darth Vader. And Ted Cruz is Darth Vader. Ted Cruz is very smart, but he's evil incarnate. And then you had and then you had Donald Trump, who's a sideshow.
Yeah.
And this kind of amalgam. And the funny thing was being in Florida, being around a lot of people from Boston, being around a lot of people from the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
Because where you stay in Florida is kind of divvied up.
Right.
People from Montreal and New York City stay on one side of Florida. People from Boston and Toronto and the Midwest stay on the other.
We're getting quite the Florida education today.
I'm sorry.
No, it's like, please.
It's the Travel Channel by Oliver Oxen. one of the things, Adam, that keeps on striking me, and I think this may happen, actually, is I don't think Trump wants to be president.
I've been thinking that as well, actually.
I think that if he actually won the presidency, he'd faint. Because I think this is a reality show. This is becoming a reality show. And I think that the Republican Party itself, they already know it's lost. You can see it in the contribution numbers.
Yeah.
You know, we hear a lot about the Koch brothers and we hear a lot about Sheldon Adelman, but there are a lot of Republican donors you never hear about that are not doing a chip in.
Yeah.
That want no part of this.
Well, they had a confab with Trump a couple of weeks ago to see if they could meet eye to eye, and you haven't heard too much about that since.
Hillary Clinton is polling equal with Trump in Utah.
Yeah.
It's one of the square states.
Yeah.
No, apart from New Mexico and Colorado, a Democrat never wins a square state. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In Utah.
Yeah.
This is how far that they have fallen. And the reason that they're fallen is because Trump has no discernible policy at all, except for, you know, brown people and walls and
things being great.
And things being great.
Yeah.
You know, there's it's kind of like flatland there. I mean, that's the depth of it.
Yeah.
Everything that he comes out with is two dimensional. It's cuckoo, and nobody wants any part of. I am this close to driving down to Cleveland, just to be around the convention. It's a 5-hour drive. It'll be fun.
Just to see the day after tomorrow. Yeah.
Oh my God! What I want to go and see the Republican tour of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and see how many people ask where the Lawrence Welk exhibit is. That's what I'm really looking forward to. But no, it's a warning.
Yeah.
It's a warning because the Republicans bought into the Tea Party. It bought into the True Believers, and they are paying for it now 6 years later. Your Sharon Angles, your Christine O'Donnells, your legitimate rape guy, Todd Aitken.
Yeah.
All of these nut bars. And when the money was coming in that they were bringing in to the Republican Party,
mm-hmm.
when the notoriety, all the Republican establishment loved them.
Yeah.
But what they were selling, what they were peddling, has now become their doom. And it should be a warning.
Yeah.
And it should be a lesson to the NDP. Now, it's going to be a much nicer argument. But when you make perfect in your mind the enemy of good, you are going to always have a problem.
Right.
This is happening right now with this LEAP manifesto,
mm-hmm.
is that will kill the only elected government, and it was a success story.
Yeah.
If anybody reads the LEAP manifesto with it in 500 miles of Rachel Notley, she's done. right?
Yeah.
And it's where, because, and I hate to use this word, because it kind of, it just leaves a bad feeling. When activists take over a party, politics is always in the center. It always is in the center.
Mm.
But this is what happened down with the Tea Party, is that the activists took over, and Donald Trump is the result of that non-thinking, dumb ideology, and it's come to fester.
And you know the weird part of it is Ted Cruz was the perfect, at least to my mind, the perfect paper Republican candidate, the piety, the anti-government. He shut down the government over Obamacare, so how much more conservative can you get?
Mm-hmm.
And then to lose to Trump, and so resoundingly lose to Trump, and a man who during a debate said there are some good things about Planned Parenthood. Sorry, I forgot the impression. There's some good things about Planned Parenthood. Which would have killed Cruz if he came out and said
absolutely.
That. Crucified him, pardon the pun. But I think you're absolutely right about the activist side of things. I've made this point before on the show. We've seen that on the Democratic side. There are so many Bernie Sanders supporters who are like throwing things at Clinton, like, oh, well, she passed or she was in favor of the crime bill in the 90s, and she voted in favor of military action in Iraq, or more specifically, giving Bush the power to attack Iraq if he saw fit. And it's just like they've created this sort of smell test, and it's not over. If you look on like Reddit, they're still out to get Hillary en masse. Like, there's still this, it's like the opposite of the Republican dream, that there's going to be some dream Republican candidate who everyone will flock to and send Trump away. There's this dream scenario where Hillary's going to be taken away in cuffs, and it'll be up to Bernie to carry the banner into battle. And it's just, yeah, it's so dangerous to just, as soon as everything becomes about ideology and you have to pass purity tests to be the candidate, whether it's like as a state representative, a local representative, a presidential candidate, it is so dangerous because... And I say this all the time when people talk about who to support. I can't vote for anybody in an election. Mm. That's why I don't vote. You are never going to find someone who agrees with you 100% of the time on 100% of the issues. So you have to make a judgment call. Can you work with this person?
Dogma kills.
Yes.
It always does. It's part of my disregard for religion. It's part of my disregard about political parties. Is that if you believe this one thing, you have to believe this other thing, whether it makes sense or not. It's just completely ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
Now, in your scenario,
mm-hmm.
One of the interesting things is that Hillary has a bit of an out. Is that Hillary can solve her Bernie problem by just naming Elizabeth Warren as her VP. Problem solved. She'll get mm-hmm. every Bernie person known to mankind. Trump doesn't have that luxury.
No one knows who's going to be his VP.
At this point, it's Oprah. I mean, who knows? Who knows? Now, I will bring up something that you may not want to hear, but remember one of the first people to join the Trump bandwagon was Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
If that happened, I would just be over the moon. I'd be in Cleveland by transporter. The problem is that Trump is losing every single group except for white men.
Yeah.
And white married women.
Yeah.
Everywhere else,
older too.
Older too.
Yeah.
He's toast. And the other thing is between creepy comments about his daughters and shifting money, which this is another very interesting thing, and this just shows you how a little scummy he is.
Yeah.
He's taking campaign contributions and then sending them over to his 20% of it over to his a business that he already owns.
Yeah.
And then now today is that he's not going to forgive. He's going to forgive loans he made to his own campaign.
Yeah.
That's called money laundering.
Yeah.
That's very, very shifty. And the other thing is that, you know, last month Hillary raised $42 million.
Yeah.
He raised 1.6.
But it's so weird though. He turns that into a positive for him, because like look how much he's owned by special interests to the tune of $40 million just last month. Meanwhile, I'm not owned. I'm raising all this money from regular Joe folks. And the other argument was he has like 70 some odd staffers versus Hillary Clinton's 700 some odd staffers. He's like, I'm running a beautiful campaign. Like I'm running it with all these just few people, and she has all these people working for her. It's like you don't realize that this is a state by state game here, and you have to have people on the ground who are making the phone calls and getting volunteers and knocking on doors for you. just because you have a rally that gets 10,000, 20,000 people tonight in Scranton, it's not going to help you on election day where it's a 50-state race. He was very good at – I'll give him credit. He ran a very good primary campaign, but the general and the primary are very, very different beasts.
Absolutely, and this is why the Republican National Committee is going WTF.
Yeah.
I mean, what is going on? I mean, really, when U.S. elections come down to three states, they come down to Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida.
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to. Now, if he's going, let's not worry about Utah. Let's worry about Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. That's still not going to do anything for him, because I just don't think he wants to be president. I think he loves the idea of running for president.
Well, and that's why I think it's Jimmy Fallon's idea. No, it's Seth Meyers' idea of like starting Chicago president for him, where he can be president on TV. And,
right.
And that will make him happy.
just to finish off, I would not be surprised if something comes in Cleveland where they either chuck him out or give him a graceful way to go.
We shall see. Oliver, thank you so much for helping me out today. It was great having you back in the studio.
Thank you. An absolute treat, Adam. Thank you very much. And to Scotty as well for having me back.
And if people want to reach out to you on the social media, because I know you're on the social media.
Yes, I have a new website, OliverRockside.com. And I, in my fortress of solitude for the last year, I've been doing a podcast. It's called Our Friends Electric, The History of New Wave. You can download it there, OliverRockside.com.
Yeah, we love the 80s.
Well, I live in them, so.
Well, thanks again. And thank you to all of you for listening to the show. We will be back next week, obviously. And next week, we have special guest Guelph Police Chief Jeff DeReuter in studio. So if you have any questions for the chief, send them our way at opensourcesguelph.com. That's our website. Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And, of course, you can download this episode and other episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean. You can reach out to me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And we'll wrap up the show by just saying, stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me at the top of the hour. And you are, of course, listening to CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we will see you back here next week. Same open sources time, same open sources channel.